An egotist is one who is never in doubt. This is Thought for Today. Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California. If you've been listening to these Thought for Today's and Instant Inspirations, you certainly realize that I am not a traditional individual. I'm not a traditional speaker who follows a traditional pattern or who finds anything off limits. If it's something that a human can experience, if it's something that a human goes through, if it's something that a human limits themselves with, I talk about it. Whether it's relationships, whether it's sex, whether it's diet, whether it is our physical body and caring for it, whether it is our mental body, the biggest, most wonderful one, and caring for it, whether it's awareness of our spiritual path, and whether it's taking responsibility for our reality of being the divine. And that, of course, is the toughest one of all, taking responsibility for our reality as the divine. Most of us don't want to do that. It's nicer to be human, make mistakes and be forgiven, to do dumb things and not take responsibility for it, say, I'm sorry, and then be excused. And you're not really sorry. You're not really sorry at all. If you were sorry, you wouldn't have allowed yourself to do it in the first place. Because you cannot allow yourself to do something and then later say you're sorry. You just can't. Because if you allow yourself to do anything, you meant to do it. Let us take a point. Nothing happens by chance. For everything, there is a cause. For everything, there's an effect. Nothing happens by chance. There's no luck. You know, there's no fate. There's none of these things. Nothing happens by chance. So, if anything happens in our life, we made it happen. Now, let's just say we have childhood diseases, chickenpox, measles, mumps, and other dumb stuff, and we made it happen. I mean, little children make it happen. They sure do. Those are all emotionally caused diseases. Emotionally, from the point of view that the children feel insecure. They feel unwanted. They feel they're not getting their own way. They're going to show their parents, and they're going to hold their breath until they die. You know, you've heard of that before. And you see, that these are nonsensical things. And kids are very powerful. Ooh, are they powerful. And we are, too. But kids are uninhibited, and when they want to have the mumps to stay home from school or to go around and make everybody contagious to them, they love doing things like that. That's again, if they're unsure of themselves, if they're children who have no happy home, if they're children who want to fight back at life instead of flow with it. Now, on the side of parents, we must say, parents may not have been trained themselves to be master in all these areas. And so it's not unusual that parents do not train their children because parents don't know that it's something you can train. So when a little child says, I'm angry, then the parent, if the parent is upset, and, you nasty little child, and slap, and you're bad, and you're, well, then the kid just gets worse. And then things like the mumps and stuff like that happen. You know, they compound. If the parent is a loving parent, and we were talking at the breakfast table this morning how many parents of generations past, 50, that's 50 years ago, 5 generations ago. So 5 generations ago, our parents didn't know how to show love. My mother would give us a hug now and then or a kiss, but she wouldn't really take us in her arms and say, I love you, you're the most wonderful thing on the earth. Yeah, you know, that's kind of nice, isn't it? Mm-hmm. But my parents didn't do that. My dad, he would shake hands, and I think he shook hands with me 3 times in my life. And he wrote me 1 letter. Now, he loved me, I know. He loved all 5 of us. And he respected us. And he enjoyed us. But he didn't have the capacity to show it. He from his own family of 8 boys and girls didn't have the capacity to show it. They were respected, they were honored, they were appreciated, but they weren't loved, because that is a weakness, and you just don't know how to show love. So these are things that come from generation to generation when we speak of generation of households and generations of decades. It's interesting, isn't it? Very interesting. It's amazing that the world has come out so well with so little show of love. But let me also point out, just because your family didn't show love didn't mean that everybody else's didn't. Because a lot of families showed love, and maybe they showed love with the switch. You come over here, and then he spanks you with a switch, with a stick, and you scream and cry. And then, okay, Daddy, I'm sorry, you know. And you don't hate your dad. You don't hate anything. But that was a show of love that you got no other way. And so you were naughty from time to time so that you'd get this show of love, this attention from your dad, who was unable to show it in a hug or a kiss, but could show it by saying, I want the best out of you. Spank, 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 you know. Now, we have taken that away from today's society. We have taken that away because it is easy to misuse it. It is easy to emotionally be unstable and start hitting your kid and hit him too hard and really hurt him. But this is a minority of the cases where children are hurt like that. Of course, your social workers will say it's a majority of the cases because that's what they handle. They don't handle 1,000 people and just work with those 1,000 people. And what are they working with? They're working with those individuals. 5 of them have abuse, and all the rest of them have a variable love. You understand? But if you take the total population and you work in the abuse center, as social workers do, then all the kids that come to them have that problem. They say, our society is going to hell. Well, they don't realize that they get just that section. No, the people work in prisons. Well, look at here, all these men in prison and da-da-da-da-da. Well, that's a small proportion of society. If all of society were in prison, well, we'd have to do some rethinking of our laws or our humanity, you know. But and the same goes for school. How many children graduate from high school? And how many children don't? Now, the children that don't are in the minority. They're, especially today, they're in the minority. Especially today, they're in the minority. Children graduate from high school mostly, what would you say, the large percentage. And only a few don't. And the few who don't are the ones who have other criteria, other programs for themselves, you know, other agenda. And I was reading about a young man who came from a home where his parents died, and he was adopted, and then the mother died, and then the father had 6 other wives, you know, because he just had 6 other wives, and the kid was sort of pushed here and there, but not unkindly, more than any other home would do, you know, for the circumstance that they were in. And so then at the age of 12, the kid went out and sold newspapers. Big deal, we all did that. And at the age of, I believe it was 16, he went to work as a busboy or something like that in a McDonald's, or no, Kentucky Fried Chicken. He worked in Kentucky Fried Chicken, and he was really good. Well, by the time he was 21, I believe it was, he was a millionaire, because Colonel Sanders took him under his wing and taught him merchandising, taught him how to do the whole program. And so this kid goes out, and abused family, neglected family, divorced, mother and father dead, the mother dies, the stepmother dies, not stepmother, but I mean the adopted mother dies, the father has 6 other wives, you know, and the kid quits school, He goes out on his own, and he meets Colonel Sanders, you know, of Kentucky Fried Chicken. And by the time he's 21, he's a millionaire. Not because he stayed with Colonel Sanders, but because he got the franchises. He got the franchises. He learned how. And he took over some failing franchises where people wanted to get out. And he made a success out of them because he learned from Colonel Sanders. Then he quit that business, sold it, and he started up his own business, Wendy's. He started up Wendy's Hamburgers, you know, mm-hmm. and named after his daughter, and became quite famous, mm-hmm. quite famous and quite successful. But, I mean, he shouldn't have, because he had everything against him, you know, all the strikes against him that one could possibly have in the beginning. But he liked himself. Now, you see, this is beautiful. If we can like ourselves, if we can teach our children to like themselves, if we can teach everyone that we meet in our world to like yourself, then we are doing a great gift, and that's part of our teaching. I like me, I like me, I like me. I am God, I am God, I am God. I am the creator of my world. I am responsible for my world. You see, these are all things that we are teaching. Now, when you see a person who says, I like me, I like me, I like me, you think, what an egotist. Well, get off your high horse. Do you like yourself? I'm talking to the general audience. Do you like yourself? Generally speaking, no. Okay. Generally speaking, you have some hang-ups. You think that you didn't have the right edge in life, you know, your parents were not happy people, or your family was this or whatever, or your mother and father died, or mother or father died, and then a stepmother, stepfather, I mean, Snow White's type of stuff, you know, comes into play. And then you feel sorry for yourself, you feel sorry for yourself, you feel sorry for yourself. And don't tell me you don't feel sorry for yourself. I know each one of you, and I know the symptoms, and they're ugly. So don't feel sorry for yourself, because you are not a very good egotist if you feel sorry for yourself. See, you have failed egotism one if you feel sorry for yourself. And now, you don't want to fail it. You want to be the greatest egotist there ever is, believing in yourself. Now, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. It's a self-made man. It's da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You heard all those things. Well, why do they say that an egotist is bad, when that is what an egotist is? An egotist is somebody who believes in themselves, and they believe in themselves so completely that they make a success out of their life and out of their world. I mean, wow, that's pretty great. Okay, an egotist is one who is never in doubt. When we like ourselves, we're never in doubt. When we say, I like me, I like me, I like me, and we face something, well, why did that happen? I've been saying I like me, you know. Why did that happen? And we don't say that. We just say, I like me, I like me, I like me. I am bigger than that. Poof. Yeah, I'm bigger than a sugar. What you do, you merely put the cause in motion of liking yourself. And when things go wrong in your world, or with anybody you're treating for or working with, you merely say, I like me. I'm fantastic. The divine in me sees all things in perfect harmony. The divine in me is perfect harmony. The divine in me is right action, peace, and truth, and love. You see, put that cause in motion. Put that cause in motion. Be the egotist that you really are. The best, the biggest, the greatest, and the most charming egotists in the world are babies. Mm-hmm. Babies believe they're number one. Babies believe that whenever they cry, that must be answered instantly. Mm-hmm. Babies believe that they should giggle and coo. Babies believe that they should eat as much as they can until they're full, and then they stop. They don't say, whoops, there's another bag of milk there, I'm going to go for the second. No, no. When they're full, burp, and then fall asleep. You know, I mean, they're cool. They're really cool. They've got the show pretty well organized, you know? And it's like a puppy dog, too. The puppy dog sees this whole chicken there, and he goes for the whole chicken, and there's just so much he can put inside. So he lays flat on top of the chicken so it'll be there when he's got room for it later, you know? He hides it, buries it in the ground so he'll have room for it. He realizes he can't eat anymore. His tummy is expanded to the limit. Oftentimes they push that limit. But when they're done, they're done. With Button, when he's done eating, he doesn't care what's going on around him. But of course, Button's a more secure and a more mature puppy. You know, what is he? 9, 12 years old, whatever it is?
96,
yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, yeah, he's getting along. He's doing just fine.
Seven,
yeah. So this is his special 7 year. And when you have that same quality that babies have and puppies have, you're lovable. You're delightful. Oh, you're a pain in the neck sometimes. The puppy's a pain in the neck. Pet me, pet me, pet me, pet me. He keeps pawing at you. They pet me, pet me. All right, now I have enough now. You just relax. But you know, they want love. And they're not shy about asking for it. Now, tell me this. Tell me this. When does a parent stop loving a child? Never. But when does a parent stop showing love to a child? When does a parent stop picking up the child and cuddling it when it gets a little heavy, when it gets so old that it's a lot of weight? Some parents never do stop. They will pick their kid up if that kid is 8 or 10 or 12, 14, and they'll grab that kid and swing him around when he's 15, 16, you know, boy or girl. They'll go up and they'll give him a big old bear hug and they'll say, I love you, and then go on their way. Or they'll even cuddle him for a while. And of course, when a man is cuddling his 16-year-old daughter, people get the wrong idea, and they're stupid. They're stupid because a man is cuddling his 16-year-old daughter because he respects and loves her. He wants her to feel masculine love without sexual overtones to it. But society right away tries to say, oh, he has an affection for his daughter, you know. And why do daughters go toward their dads and sons go toward their mother? Mm-hmm. Because they want that feminine or masculine relationship that is so important for building up a balanced, harmonious life. But society wants to make a thing out of it, the Oedipus complex and all that sort of nonsense, you know. And how often is the Oedipus complex expressed? Perhaps more than we know. But if it is more than we know, maybe it's not bad. If it is bad, then it should be something that's investigated. Why do we have a complex? All right. Let's compare the Oedipus complex. You know what Oedipus complex is? It's a worship of your mother or father and wanting to have sex with them. All right, now, why should we say the Oedipus complex is so bad when it's just something that needs to be put in its right perspective? Mm-hmm. When we don't say outwardly that eating too much is bad, mm-hmm. and being fat. Mm-hmm. But you see, we do that. Mm-hmm. And drinking. We have to have a cocktail when we come home or something, you know. Or you have wine with your meal. The doctor said to me, do you drink any alcohol? I said, well, I have a glass of wine with my meal about now and then. He said, oh, that's very good. But you see, if I said, I have to have 3 or 4 cocktails when I first come home from work, and then I have wine with my meal, and I drink a whole quart or gallon while I'm eating my meal, he might say, that seems a little excessive. But, and of course, if he drinks, then it won't seem too excessive when cataloged by his own experiences. So, an egotist is never in doubt. A parent who shows love to their children as a wholesome, fantastic experience, whether the child is nothing in the mommy's tummy, and I shouldn't say in the mommy's tummy, in the mommy's womb, or if the child is 80 years old and you're 90 or 95 or 100, you know. Well, no, you can have children quite early. But, and of course, if you're that age, you might have, because back in the early days, you did have children earlier. Okay. Now, the showing of love for yourself first develops the most wholesome egotism you could ever want. Then show your love to the world. Now, we used to do an om every morning, and we would hug each other and kiss each other and say we love you. But since Ellen is running the program now, we're not doing that anymore. And so that's okay. Maybe she has a reason for having us desire this without getting it. That's like, you know, tantalizing us. But whatever. We want to develop our abilities to love unconditionally, to love unreservedly, to love beautifully, and be the greatest egotists in the world. Because we are. And so it is. I love you. I love you.